Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Recording.
Hi, you're listening to Fail Like an Artist with your hosts, Julie Battisti.
And me, Phoebe Ganser. A podcast discussing all the ways we've failed as artists, with insight, advice and humour.
Each episode we will discuss a failure and what we've learnt from it.
Alright, so today we are going to be talking about the idea around coming up with original ideas and copying and things like that. Is that kind of it? Or have you, could you say it in a nutshell better?
No, I think, you know, talking about originality is what we wanted to focus on. But we also, normally I think we have a more structured idea of what we want to flesh out. And we don't today. So, you know, we'll see how
We're just going to have a conversation. We put a poll in our stories on Instagram about what people wanted to chat about, and people did seem quite keen. It was quite a majority vote on talking about originality in art. So I think, yeah, we'll just sort of see where the conversation goes and what areas we cover, because I think it's such a big, broad topic that it's probably at least one podcast here, but many more tangents that could be covered. But anyway, how are you, Julie? How's your day, weekend, life?
I'm good. My weekend was busy. I mean, I had my husband was on call, so I had the boys to myself. So I didn't get a lot of painting done, a little bit at night. But it was a lovely weekend. At the moment in the studio, I've just started a whole bunch of works, and they're all at the ugly shit stage. And
I'm sure they're not. The way that I've seen them. They're not.
But there's one in particular that I'm just not feeling the vibe. Not feeling the vibes. It's not really how I work. But I feel like I'm going to need to take one of them and just push it a little bit further so that I can see that I'm not, that I can do it again. I'm just at that.
So when you say a few, how many is a few?
So I've started three, and I'm just finishing one small cloud round that I need to just finish up and take into De Novo. But I want us to have, there's three other big paintings that I also want to start. But I might just need to knuckle down and take one a little bit further.
You're so good. I had tried to do your way, and now I'm just reverted back to my original way of just working on one at a time.
That's fine.
I know.
No,
I
think you've got to...
I'm going to start, if I get a chance today, I want to draw up another one. So I've at least got the bones of it. But it's hard because the one I'm doing at the moment is in the really bad teenage stage where it just is like, ugh, so ugly.
Yeah.
Not ugly, but, you know, just gawky and awkward and like, are you sure this is going to turn out all right? I don't know. And I get panicky at that stage leaving it, and starting another one, because I think, oh.
Yeah. The one I'm struggling with is a smaller commission work, and it's actually making me think, I don't know if I want to keep working small. I enjoy it. It just takes me a lot longer to get into it, and I find it way more, I don't enjoy it as much. And so I'm thinking about just saying I'm not going to take on any more small commissions, because when it's not a commission, I can just put it aside and leave it. But when it is a commission and I've got a due date, I've got to push on regardless of how I'm feeling.
Yeah, and that's not...
And that just feels like a lot at the moment.
Yeah, well, I would say that sounds good to sort of set yourself a kind of limit of size that you, you know, minimum size limit, and just be like... It doesn't have to be forever anyway, does it? It's just like right now with a lot on your plate, if you're not going to really enjoy that process, then it'd be quite nice to just say, I'm only actually going to take on things that I know I'm going to enjoy the whole part of the process.
Yeah. It's probably one of my last commissions for the year, to be honest. So that's all right.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Anyway, how are you? How was your weekend?
Oh, yeah. We had a little pre-chat about that. Yeah, it's been a bit of a difficult parenting time for me lately. Quite a few fails happening on my part, which I've struggled with, but I won't go into those now. But yeah, I'll talk about a sort of funny fail with my weekend. It was my daughter had her birthday party yesterday, and it was quite had been postponed for like 2 months basically due to a lot of different reasons. So she finally had her party, which she was very excited about, and she wanted me to make her a swimming pool cake, which after like a lot of Pinterest trawling, and I came up with a kind of idea of making this cake and lining, like cutting out the shape of a pool into the cake and then lining it with fondant icing, and then she wanted it to have jelly in it, blue jelly in it, and so made up this jelly, poured the jelly, like when it was cool, into the swimming pool area. I'll put a picture perhaps in the newsletter so if anyone wants to see. And I was really excited because it did sort of look like a swimming pool, and she was so pleased. And then in the morning when I got it out of the fridge, the jelly had all sunk, like drained into the cake, and there was no, like someone had pulled the plug. And I was like, no, oh no. And then she was like, where's the pool not in there anymore? And so then I had to try, I was like, it's okay, I'll make more jelly and I'll pour more jelly in there. And then, so I drove to the nearest like shop, supermarket, and they had no jelly. They had no blue jelly. And so then I drove to the next nearest supermarket and they had no jelly. Then I drove to the next supermarket and they had jelly. By this point, it had been gone about half an hour. Got some blue jelly finally, drove home, made up more jelly, poured it into the inside of the cake, and it immediately started to just drain into the cake again. So then I had to find this little tiny, quick, get a little cup, and then I was like bailing out the jelly back into the bowl. Oh no, quick, bail it out, because I was like, I don't have any more jelly. Like, this is it.
I'm not driving.
No. So I bailed out the swimming pool quickly, and then decided to set the jelly separately in a bowl. And then I just, when that was set, just before the party, I kind of sort of got a fork and stirred up the jelly and poured it into the middle, but instead of being like flat and glassy and looking like set jelly in the cake, it just looked like a load of mashed up jelly poured into the middle.
I thought it looked pretty cool.
From a distance, it looked all right from a distance, but she was like, why is it all lumpy and not flat anymore? I was like, this is how it is. It was like so stressful. I was like, why didn't I just buy a pavlova? Anyway, she was really proud of it, but Also, it was a massive cake, and we've still got like half a cake left. And
you're just
going to
be eating fondant icing for like 3 weeks now.
It's so much buttercream because it has all these chocolate fingers that were like the deck, the wooden deck.
I love those.
But it's just I also had to drive and buy two more packets of those because I ran out halfway around. So that was a
Do you know what this reminds me of? Have you seen those Hamish Blake Instagram stories whenever he makes his kid a cake?
No.
You have to look them up. So he does them overnight and like just drinks while he's doing it. So as he's making these cakes, which are usually ridiculously ambitious, he's getting progressively more drunk.
I should have done
and
that.
And it usually results at like 2 a.m. Yeah. They're very funny.
Is the cakes good in the end or terrible?
I mean, they're better than anything I could do, but mostly I'm just in it for the humour.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she was really pleased with her cake and everybody, you know, all her friends were like, oh, wow, a pool cake. You know, because she had these little, like, Playmobil figures that were, she's got, like, they've got, like, you know, swimming costumes and things on. And so we put those around it and then one of them was in a little mini donut.
I thought that was really cute.
Yeah, she was really happy, but like my husband was like, oh, have you calmed down now after that stress?
I didn't see him making any bloody cakes.
I know. I was like, have you ever tried to make a swimming pool cake? You find it's really, really fucking hard.
Better than anything my boys ever get, trust me.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, this is it. This is the last time I try and do something very ambitious. Anyway, we've got so much cake. And I said to my boys this morning, do you want to take some cake with you to school? And they both looked at me and went, no. We've had enough cake.
Studio snacks this week.
Oh,
cake.
No. I'm like, I'm not really a big cake person. But anyway, I have to be this week.
You weren't a cake person.
No, I wasn't a cake person. Past tense. Anyway, so that was funny. That was my little fail this weekend. And yeah, what am I doing? So I'm working on trying to finish this 60 by 60 centimeter painting. Don't think I'll finish it today. Hopefully if I crack on, I might be able to finish it tomorrow if I work tonight. And then a couple more that I want to finish before sending them off. So yeah, just trying to do that. And that's it really. That's where I'm up to.
Before we jump in, I might start this week just by wanting to say a quick little thank you to some people who've supported us on our Ko-fi page.
Yay.
So a big thanks to Rita, Helen, Wendy, Michelle and Caroline. Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone else who's donated as well. It's been super lovely and I just can't quite get over the fact that that's happened. But yeah, huge thanks.
We're going to try and put some of that money towards getting Julie and I in the same vicinity. That would be quite...
One of my friends offered to film it. I feel like now that mentioned it in a previous pod, there's going to be the expectation of the Baywatch slow-mo.
We're doing the Baywatch. So, yeah, so hopefully before midway through the year, we're going to try and do it in the next couple of months or so, where we catch up and... Yes, so yeah, some of that money hopefully will go towards helping that happen. And then we'll be able to do an in-person podcast. Can't wait for that. That's going to be so fun.
That'll be awesome.
It'll be like a special bonus 3-hour long episode probably. Watch this space. So yeah, that's really exciting and really lovely that people are supporting us and the podcast. And we're just so, so thrilled to have got over 20,000 downloads, which I'm sure it would be even more by this point, but yeah, we're so grateful that everyone's enjoying it and want to keep going. So on that note, let's talk about this topic.
Yes, so starting off with talking about original ideas, I guess.
Yes.
If we just want to start quite broad, what are your, do you have any first thoughts around that? Like what comes to mind when you think of original ideas in art?
I think it's very hard to reinvent the wheel. I think the thought of having to try to reinvent the wheel is an impossible task. And I think all you can do is try and put your own spin on things. I think if we spend too much time looking outwards and realizing that other people are doing similar things to us, it can really cause you to kind of have a crisis of confidence and a wobble about your own kind of idea. And that's not conducive to creating anything good then, because you're suddenly influenced by the fact that other people might have done something similar. Which is why I think, you know, yes, so spending too much time on social media isn't a good thing, because the more you sort of look outwards and see other people's things, the more you're going to question whether or not what you're doing is your own, or whether you've been influenced. And I think it's impossible to not be influenced. So trying to be completely original, it's a very difficult thing.
And I think as creatives, we often think your creative idea isn't worthy sometimes, mm-hmm. unless it is 100% original. And I don't think that's possible either. And I think it's not a standard that we hold up to other industries. Like, yeah. you don't go to a, do you know what I mean? I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but my brain just doesn't think that way. But like, if you think of the way that chefs learn, they learn like, yes. a basic set of recipes, and then they sort of tweak it and make it their own. And we think that's fine, that's great, that's how they yeah. learn. But for some yeah. reason with artists, we think, oh, well, if they're doing something that's even slightly similar to someone else, they're not original enough, or we're not being creative enough. But I yeah. don't think creativity and originality are necessarily, I don't think they're separate. I think it's...
No. I think that's a really good analogy. I love that. And I think that's so true. I think at the beginning, it's almost impossible / not actually quite ridiculous to think that you could start off with being original. Just like you say, with the being a chef, like, you have to learn those initial knife skills and then all of those initial kind of basic recipes, like how to make a roux, how to make a bechamel sauce, how to make a, you know, whatever. I'm not a chef, so I don't even know what you'd learn, but all of those basic recipes that will then see you through to being able to put your own spin on them later on. And you know, a chef won't necessarily completely change. I mean, you don't, you know, there's certain things, like, you go to a restaurant, you order a tiramisu, it's going to have the sort of same ingredients as another place that's got a tiramisu, but you know that one is going to taste slightly different from another, because that the way they've combined those ingredients and the quantities and the way they've assembled it, etc., is going to be slightly different.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think to start off with, whenever you start, you know, whether you're learning self-taught or whether you're in a place, an education sort of environment, you're going to be looking at other people's art and in a sense copying and then learning that way. So
and don't get me wrong, I don't think either of us is saying that if you are copying someone's style, color palette, subject matter, and your work, you're trying to make your work look exactly like theirs and then passing it off as your own. Mm. Like, I think there's
a massive difference.
A big difference between copying in that sense and learning from someone, taking inspiration from someone.
Mm.
Lots of people, and historically in lots of education settings, people have done copies of other work in order to learn something from that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially if you acknowledge it.
Yeah. I think it's where, yeah, there's a definite difference between, you know, learning and copying from someone and acknowledging that, to looking at someone else's art, copying it, and then trying to sell it and say that you came up with that. Like,
yeah,
you alone will know that and know the difference. But exactly. That's where you just have to have, I think, integrity as an artist and ask yourself, is this my idea, really?
I think when people don't acknowledge it, it does come back to bite them. At some stage, someone will question them on it. And
yeah,
I think you're better off being honest from the outset. I was inspired by such and such. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's really lovely when people do let you know that you've inspired them to do something.
Mm.
Because your style is always going to be slightly different anyway. I couldn't, no matter how closely I tried to copy something, it would still have my hand in it.
Exactly. It does get a bit grey. And I've certainly experienced that and been on the receiving end of that. Mm. And then I've also been on... So when I was starting out, I remember starting out doing landscapes, and I had bought a landscape painting on paper from an artist that I followed. But, you know, they were selling sort of like A4 paper artworks in their stories, and I thought, oh, they're really nice, I will buy one. And then I'm not sure if I was doing landscapes at that stage. I think I was still just doing the resin art. And then I had started to move into doing landscapes. And now I feel like my landscapes were different from this one that I bought and from the person that I followed. She had quite a distinct style, definitely. But then one day I thought it was a bit strange that I hadn't seen her work in my feed for a while. And I, you know, went and typed in her Instagram handle. And it was like user not found. And I thought, oh, that's weird. Maybe I've typed it wrong. So then I spelt it differently and tried a few different things. And the person that didn't show up. And then I thought, this is odd, because I'm sure she did do, you know, quite well. And she was selling lots of work. And I had this idea. I was like, well, hang on a minute. I'll just go into my other Instagram account, because I had another one. So switched over to that Instagram account and searched her name, and immediately her name came up. And that was when I thought, she's blocked me. Like, that's weird. She's blocked my account so that I can't see what her art's doing. And I had this horrible, sickly feeling. I felt really uncomfortable, because I thought, I don't understand why she's blocked me. And I almost sent her a message from my other account to say, oh, why have you blocked me? I don't understand why you've blocked me. And the only thing I could think was that she must have felt either threatened by or worried that I would try to copy her, because I had changed and started to do landscapes, abstract landscapes, and she was doing abstract landscapes. And whilst I felt like mine were very different, perhaps she saw something that felt too similar to hers. And I respect that. Like, I, you know, like that's her prerogative, and that's, she's allowed to block whoever she wants. And but I did feel very ashamed that somebody would think that. And it, and you know, like it's difficult for me to admit this, because I didn't intentionally at any stage think I want to copy her. But there must have been a reason, you know, and I don't know, because I never asked, I never did reach out, but that made her think that I was a threat or something in some way.
And it's, everyone's got really different personal reasons about why they might block or hide an account, and it may have nothing to do with you. It might be, like a reason that's totally personal to her, and I think you can't take that
on
board.
But yeah, it was enough for me to then be hyper vigilant about trying to not look, you know, it did shake my confidence a bit, and I thought, oh no, gosh, I'm, because I was just sort of starting out, and I was just sort of playing in this area of not doing resin anymore, and you know, it all felt quite new to start painting again, because it had been such a long time since I'd actually held a paintbrush. And then I did get a bit of a wobble where I thought, I don't know if I've got any original ideas in me. Like, maybe I haven't got any original ideas. And it took a bit of like playing and practicing and not sharing things online before I felt confident then to kind of say,
that's interesting,
this is me and this is mine. Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, I know that you'd had a few people, I remember when you were doing the resin, there was quite a few accounts that popped up that looked a lot like yours. And there were people that were actually blatantly just using your images on their feed. Do you think you were hypersensitive because of that as well? Like you knew how it felt to be on the receiving end?
Yes, I think so. And I think because I had felt so wronged when I saw someone copying what I was doing, and especially when they just literally lifted the image and put it on their page and said, here's paint, you know, in Russian or something. I couldn't read it ever, but it was like, and you know, quite a few accounts that it was just, not just my images, but other people doing similar work. And four or five of my images on someone's account that they were like saying was theirs. And I felt so wronged by that. And so kind of like that's not okay, like that's my work, like I can't believe anyone would do that. And then I think I made up this narrative in my head, like it was completely in my own mind, where I said, this person, I really liked her art and I really respected her as an artist and loved what she did, she thinks I'm trying to copy her. And I wanted to say, I'm not trying to copy you, you know, but I couldn't, you know. And it felt like I'm not like those other people that copy other people. I'm not one of them. And to suddenly feel like I'd been put in that camp felt really difficult and upsetting.
Yeah. Oh, that is.
But then again, wondered, like you say, it could have been just totally personal, because she could have been like, God, that woman's really annoying, I don't want her following me.
There are lots of different reasons, like, for why you could block someone. It might have been that she had particular sensitivities around something that was showing up in your feed, whether it was kids or a painting style, or you just don't know. And I think sometimes your imagination can get the better of you in that sort of instance.
I tend to make up the absolute worst case scenario and then decide that's a fact. It was definitely a thought that I, you know, really nurtured in my head for several months. I was a fraud and a copying artist, and I was like, so I tried then really hard to kind of make my work as different as possible. And I think because I hadn't gone through a kind of like experimental phase, you know, offline, I felt like I was online and I had an online presence and I had people who expected me to be an artist. And so I sort of, I don't know, I kind of felt like I had to fast track to know what I was doing. And yet I actually needed to have some incubation time and just practice and try lots of different things. And then it kind of turned full circle and I started doing these, like I was remembering when I did screen printing and how I really enjoyed with screen printing, where I would you have like a silk screen down and you put your coloured ink like on the silk screen, and then you use a squeegee and you pull the ink from the top of the squeegee, I'm really doing a bad job of explaining this in words. Be much easier if I was doing a visual demonstration.
PB's demonstrating what a screen is.
I'm demonstrating with my hands here, guys. You have to just.
This is a non-visual medium.
Use your imagination. So you put your squeegee at the top of the silk screen, which is lying on top of your fabric, and you pull the squeegee down towards you, and it presses the ink through the silk screen onto the fabric underneath. And you either have, you know, you can have a stencil down, or you can just have it open and just pull colours through. And I was remembering that, and I found a squeegee in my studio from back when I was, I don't know even how I had it, to be honest. And I thought, oh, I could use that, and I might do a bit of that with paint just on paper. And I started to experiment and do these little kind of landscapes where I put blobs of paint down and then squeegee them down. And they were so fun, and they were just really nice sort of quick, simple ideas. And I had lots of people say, oh, I'd love to see how you do that, because I don't think I sort of showed them without any process. And then I thought, oh, I'll do a reel or something and show them how you do it. Anyway, then next thing I know, I see these popping up all over the place. And one particular person, a few months later, sent me a message saying, oh, thank you for doing that tutorial on how to do those landscapes, because I've now got 100,000 followers on TikTok, and I've been making these videos on how on doing up paintings like this. And and then I looked, and she had over 100,000 followers on Instagram, and she her TikTok was just absolutely huge with millions of views. And she was like, yeah, if I hadn't seen your video that time, I would never have discovered this way of doing it. And then I was like, oh, great, good for you, glad it's all working out and you're so successful now with that idea.
But I mean, knowing you, then, you probably could have done that for a little bit, and then you would have got bored with it and wanted to move on anyway.
Exactly. And what I mean is, for a few minutes I sort of felt a bit bitter, if I'm honest. I felt a bit sort of oh, that's a bit not fair. And then I had to have a word for myself and go, well, you didn't want to do, had you made videos of that and put it on TikTok, maybe you'd have been famous or, viral or whatever. And if you really, really loved that way of doing it, you would have done bigger pieces or more pieces, and you could have pushed it further. But it was more of an experimental playing kind of stage. And wasn't enough to itch the scratch that I had of wanting to develop my painting skills. So then I got over it, and I was like, you know what? No, that's actually really great that she saw something and she ran with it and she made it her own. And this is the thing about copying. There's two ways of going with it. You can copy someone else and always be behind them, and they will always be one step ahead, evolving.
Yeah,
and you will always just be in their shadow if you decide that that's the way you want to go and you just want to copy someone else. But if you take an idea and then evolve it and create your own spin on it and push it in a completely different direction, that's when copying can actually be more of a kind of bouncing pad. Is that the right word? Like a springboard.
Yeah, launching board.
A launching point.
For launching your own pad. Yeah.
A launching pad.
Sorry.
Launching pad. And you can then shoot off into the stratosphere in a completely different way. And so yes, I think we have to just realize that looking at someone else's idea or way of doing something is often a really great way of igniting a kind of spark in your own imagination of, ooh, how could I do that and push that in a different direction, versus I'm going to literally copycat that idea and churn out the same thing.
Yeah. I've come across quite a few people now within the art sphere and other areas where people have felt like their account or their photos or their ideas are being copied, and the first instinct for some has been to take all of their ideas offline. Like, I'm not going to share on social media anymore, or I'm not going to give too much away, or I'm not going to, because I'm so terrified of people copying me. And I get that. And if that's the right move for you, if like the insecurity of having someone take that from you is too much, then I feel sure if that's the right thing for you.
Yeah.
But part of me really agrees with what you've just said in the don't be afraid of being copying, because if you're being copied, you're always going to stay one step ahead anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, a lot of people used to message me and say, I'm too scared of posting my work on social media because I think people will then copy it. And I'm almost, I sort of think,
but you've done it now.
Get over yourself. Do you know what I mean? Don't think that everybody's out there to copy you. There might be someone out there to copy you, but you've got to see that as flattery now. That's what I see it as, in a way.
Yeah. I think it's that balance between wanting to share your work and knowing that that gives so many people inspiration and lots of people love seeing what you're working on and that risk that someone's going to try and copy you. I think it's just one of those things that comes in the social media landscape and you can't dwell on it, because I think it's... I don't think that the original, there's no way of coming up with an original idea, but I think part of what makes us human is what makes all art in its own way original. Like, even if you tried to copy someone's work identically, there's still going to be a fingerprint that was yours. There's, you know, even amongst, and I mean, one of the things I think that I get quite hung up about is that, so even amongst the galleries that I'm with, there are other people who are painting peonies on dark backgrounds. And I think in some ways it's what made me slow down in that area for a bit. But I think lately, I don't know if it's a confidence thing or if it's, I've just been really enjoying my peony paintings again. I think I'm less hung up on it now. And I remember a little while ago, I think it was Willie Russo put up a post about what to do if you're being copied. And one of her, the takeaways that I had not thought about it in this way before, she said one of the things you can do is make sure you document your progress. And so, you know, in a lot of ways I don't worry about not being original with my peonies, because the photos are my own, the lighting is my own, the way I paint is my own, and it's very different to the other people that are working similar to me. And then I think if I take it back far enough, like I was using dark backgrounds even when I was at high school, but then if I flesh into that a little bit more, I got my dark background idea because I was looking at people like Caravaggio and Bill Henson. And so I can call anything my own, but I also have to acknowledge there are plenty of people out there doing similar things. There are people that I've learned from, been inspired by, but I'm continuing, I hopefully, to evolve my ideas and change them. And, you know, everything that I do is going to be mine in some way. And I think...
I just think it's important to also remember that there is only one of you, and people who follow you and your art, you know, even if they could then find online a poor man's version of you, you know, a peony on a dark background that someone else has done, they're not going to go and buy that one because they want your one. Do you know what I mean? They want to buy a Julie Battisti. It's like,
it's okay if they do. Like, there might be something about my work that doesn't speak to them that someone else's does, and that's okay,
because
my work's not going to be for everyone. And it would be a lie to say that I don't get impacted sometimes when I see lots of like work that feels similar to mine. Sometimes it does. I think, oh, I'm just one of many. And it does play on me a little bit. And I do have times when I have to hide accounts, block accounts, not go on Instagram when I'm feeling particularly vulnerable. But I also have to think that my work is different and it's my own and I love it. And, I mean, I know, I think the subject matter that I'm choosing is never going to be, like, I'm never going to be the only person painting flowers. So I can either get hung up on that and not paint those things, or I can, it's what I love doing. So
You can't,
getting hung up on that is
you
not...
can't sort of go, well, you know, right, what's no one ever painted before? Like, okay, no one's ever painted, impossible. Like, okay, no one's ever painted, you know, used cotton buds. So
that's all. Find one, though.
Well, there will be, exactly. There will be. But let's just say, for argument's sake, we've Googled it and nobody's painted used cotton buds. And so you go, right, great. There's an original idea. Brilliant. I'm going to paint used cotton buds. Do you really want to paint that?
Exactly. Like,
if the only reason you're doing that is because you think it's an original idea, that's not a reason to paint it. You have to start with the passion and the desire to paint something or create something because you're, you know, you have a kind of connection to that subject matter. And if you don't have that initial connection, then well, you're just doing it for the sake of trying to be original, and that's almost banal.
But then I think there's that whole, there's that correlation with the avant-garde side of art, with doing something that's so out there and so unique. And if that's not what you want to do, yeah. I don't think that newness and originality matches. Are the only ways of defining yeah. successful creativeness, if that it's a, you know, that was a really poorly worded sentence. No, but I mean, but I think yes, the sentiment
I remember in, you know, like 1998 or 1999 when I was at college, so prior to university, I went with our college up to London to see the Sensation exhibition, which was in the Tate Modern, and it was you know, people like Damien Hirst, and it was the first sort of time you had his shark in a formaldehyde, and other artists, Tracy Emin, people like that, who were creating these works of conceptual art that were completely kind of, yeah, original ideas and very confronting, some of them. Some of them were quite kind of difficult to look at, touching on things like paedophilia and murder and incest and rape, all those sort of like really difficult subjects. And whilst they were really, really interesting and really made you think and leave there with a very kind of, you know, like, oh, wow. And then we had to go and write about them. You know, that was part of the course. You know, that was part of the coursework, was to write about our experience. It didn't make me go, I want to be an artist like that. That, you know,
That wasn't not, what sang to you.
No, it's not. That's not the kind of art I want to make. I don't want to make political art or art that, like, is more about the reaction in the viewer. I actually want to make art that's about what I love and enjoy painting, and hopefully find someone out there that also likes that and resonates with it. And maybe that's a bit wishy-washy and not enough for some people, but for me that's enough.
And I think, yeah. I think when I think about, I know one of the things we've talked about this year is, so your current subject matter is still life. And so like me, you're not the only person that's ever done a still life before. And even if we think about what's in your still life, like, you know, the glassware and that sort of thing, you're not the first person to paint glassware, but it is the first time that you've painted that. And it's, you know, the first time people have seen Phoebe Gander's take on that. And I think that's where the originality comes in.
Yeah, it has been quite difficult. I have had to kind of mute accounts and not search too much, because I've had well-meaning people send me images from other artists, like, oh, I found this artist and they paint still life. Look, they do glassware like you. And then you go, oh, great.
Yeah, I've had the why
have you sent me that? Like, now I'm
paranoid
that you think I've copied them, or I'm, you know...
I think it becomes the comparison trap gets a bit stronger as well when someone is doing something like you, and maybe they are, you know, more popular or in bigger galleries, or I think that's why I often will mute people that people have suggested. And, you know, I thought that with my clouds that I had found something that was more original, like I'd sort of moved away from the flowers and thought, I've got this thing that's my own. And then I remember someone sending me another cloud painter saying, oh, their work reminds me of yours. I remember looking at them in some huge galleries and I was just like, oh, great.
It's just so soul-destroying. I did the same thing. So I was on the verge of contacting a gallery in Australia and plucking up the kind of courage to create, like, a, you know, an email with a PDF of some of my images. And then that gallery popped up in my Instagram feed announcing a new client, you know, a new person they were representing, who painted glassware with, like, lemons and everything. And I then clicked on that person's account, who I'd never heard of before, and my heart just sank, because I thought, oh no, they're doing glassware. And even the similar kind of glasses that I have in my house that I had photographed, and there's lots of paintings that I haven't even painted yet that are just photos in a folder, and there were literally similar compositions and colors and everything that this artist had done, and this gallery was now representing them. And I just thought, well, that's it. I can't, there's no way I'm going to bother now messaging that, sending that gallery an email, because they're just going to think I'm just, like, a poor man's version of this person, and that I'm just copying her, even though I'd never seen or heard of her before.
But you never know, I don't know if I would let that even stop you now. Like, I feel like that in real life, your work is always going to feel different to someone else's. And I'm seeing more and more galleries that have two or three different people looking at the same subject matter.
Yeah. I think I'm just too... I haven't been doing it long enough, I feel, to, I don't know, have the confidence to be like, this is, I don't know. I just don't know if I've got the confidence yet. I need to, I feel like I've only been doing it for
such a short time. You'll know when the time is right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get quite easily, I don't know, what's the word, derailed if I see things like that.
Mm.
And it's,
I think a lot of people do. And I think this is a really common issue for people to feel insecure about. Like, you never, ever want to come across as though you're trying to be someone else. And it's really hard, especially when you feel like you've been creating something that's really unique and yours, and then to see something similar that someone else is doing, it gives you, does give you a shake. And I still get it sometimes. And I think, well, I don't want to do that because that person's doing something.
Yeah. But then I go, but I really love painting, like, this subject matter, and I don't want it to stop me. I still feel like I've got so much to explore within this subject matter, and the glass and light and fruit and things, and I just need to put the blinkers on, really, and not compare myself to other people's. And yeah, like, looking closely at that person's work, when I actually sort of zoomed in, the way they painted was different. You know, the brush strokes are different, and the colours are a bit more muted, and there are differences. Like, there are, you know, just like two people's fingerprints are different, but, you know, they both could look similar at first glance.
I think that it's where possible, it's really important to see work in the flesh, because I think sometimes the way that we photograph things with our phones and put them online, and you're seeing them from a distance, everything seems really flattened and similar. You can't really see brush strokes. You can't see, you know, whether laser paint are opaque or translucent, and it's really hard to see brush marks and that individuality. Whereas I think in a gallery setting, or in real life, doesn't need to be in a gallery, you can see the differences are more pronounced, I find. Yeah. And I always worry less about something once I've seen someone's work. I'm like, no, their work feels totally different. I can understand that from a distance on Instagram, maybe someone could look at their work and my work and go, oh, you guys do the similar thing. And I think, it's the way that we photograph things and the way that we, put a composition together. And, you know, there's ways that are mine that I can cling on to and think that's how I do it. And that's what makes me different.
Yeah. Just like that chef analogy, like two meals could, you know, two, I don't know, lasagnas or whatever could look both like lasagna. But then when you taste it, you know, you get the depth of different flavors, and they use different ingredients, and that's it. It's like it's the initial first glance is not giving you enough information to really, you need to look closer and see that there is a lot of difference in the way two people paint the same subject.
When is an idea copied, and when is it just inspired by someone else's art? Like, at what point is that? But I don't really know if I've got the answer to it. I just think it's an interesting question to sort of contemplate.
Think about. Yeah. I think perhaps that's just a sort of thing that you, if you are worried about copying, being an especially emerging artist, holding that idea in your mind before you start, painting could be sort of useful. And if it is that you're in a space where you're not confident with your own sort of ideas, and you're still thinking that you want to kind of imitate or work in a similar way to another artist, then that's fine, but perhaps just keep those images offline. You know, don't necessarily share them, you know, unless you've contacted the artist and said, look, I'm really inspired by you. Is it okay if I tag you in these and say that I've used yours as reference and things, because
I think, I mean, it's a really personal thing. If that's what you feel like you need to do, then
yeah,
as in, like, if you feel like staying offline is what you need to do. But I feel like sometimes we all hide those little bits, and then nobody thinks that anyone's journey ever includes those transitional moments where you're maybe learning from someone else or through someone else. And I often think back to when I used to teach, and you'd show your students how to do something and they would then take that idea and run with it, and you end up being so proud to see them progress and synthesize information. And
I think we get too caught up. I mean sort of like literally ad verbatim copying, that, you know, if you need to if you want to do that, then that's probably not necessarily something that I would want to share online. If I literally looked at someone else's art painting and then and thought, right, well, I'm going to put that on my computer screen and I'm going to sit here and copy that exactly. That's fine if that's something you want to just do as a practice, because, you know, people have been doing that for years, copying from masters and copying from other people just as a practice of painting.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily what personally I would want to put online and say, here's a painting I've done, unless I made it very obvious that I copied that from an artist and tagged them and acknowledged them. And at that stage, that's fine. That's, you know, no one can stop you from doing that.
I think you document it properly and say...
Putting a price on it or putting it up without any kind of nod towards where you got the idea from, that's a slippery slope and a very sort of grey area that I wouldn't want to go into.
Yeah, I don't. I think that gets a bit.
But certainly, being inspired by another's idea or another's style, sharing those are fine. You know, sharing those works are fine. You just need to ask yourself the question of how heavily influenced have I been, and at what point has it crossed the line from being someone else's idea and work to mine? You know. I think it's just, I mean, I remember CJ Henry, who's a pencil artist, having to destroy a piece of art that she got accused of. Well, let me just look it up, because
this is not a story I know.
So in 2019, CJ Henry created a realistic illustration based on an iconic photograph portraying Andy Warhol, portraying Andy Warhol and Jean-Michel Basquiat. Is that how you say his name?
I think it's slightly different, but I can't remember how exactly it's...
Basquiat?
Basquiat, but I can't remember.
Okay. Anyway, Jean-Michel Basquiat, brandishing boxing gloves. The work was inspired by one of a selection of images taken by legendary photographer Michael Halsbad back in July the 10th, 1985, during a shoot with the pop art luminaries. So CJ Henry received a cease and desist letter from Halsbad to destroy the artwork. And basically, when you look at her drawing of the artwork, and we'll put this in the newsletter, she's hyper realistic with her style, like photorealism. I mean, it's next level. It literally looks like a photocopy of the original photograph. You cannot tell the difference when you've got the photograph that he took and the drawing that she's done side by side. They are almost impossible to tell the difference between the two, unless, I guess, you went, like you said, with a very magnifying glass bent up very close and could see that it's actually done by pencil. But her skill level is just mind-blowingly, can't even imagine how she does it. But so she basically then had to, she filmed it, I think there might be a YouTube or something of it, and she spray paints black paint all over her drawing to destroy it, because the photographer Michael Halsband said that she had breached copyright by drawing the photograph too similarly to his work.
You know, she contested reproducing that image.
She contested that it was a drawing, and that, you know, there was no, you know, she just drew
that must drew be really
a
ref- difficult.
Used it as a referent photo. So yes, there is, I guess, some people, you know, you have as an artist, as that photographer's right to say, no, I don't want you to draw my photograph and make money from it. You know, that's my original artwork, and unless you've got my permission, you don't get to do that. And so it's an interesting grey area where some people are okay with you doing that and some people are not okay with you doing that. So that's something to bear in mind and think about when you're using reference images, you know, if you are using them. It can be a tricky situation if you haven't got permission and then you end up breaching copyright that way. So yeah,
I think it's always worth asking. I've had several emerging artists ask me if they could use some of my photos that they found on my Instagram over the years. Generally, I'm okay with it if they ask first and if it's not an image I myself have used or plan to use. But I mean, it can be difficult, and it can be, I mean, I always feel bad saying no to people, and I haven't had to yet, but I think there will come a day where I'll have to say, look, that's an image that I plan on using. It's my photograph and...
I mean, I had someone contact me recently who was starting a paint and sip company or something over in, I think, Australia. They wanted to know whether they could use my artwork as reference. So not a photo, but like a painting that I painted. They wanted to use that in their class, and their students would paint my painting. And I sort of said, well, yeah, you can buy the copyright to that. We can come up with a price or something where you can, you know, use an image of mine. And then they were kind of shocked that I wanted money, you know, that they were like, oh, I thought you might just let me have it for free. And it's like, well, then you're making money from... You're doing a class where you just stand there with my painting and a load of people painting my painting. And how is that fair to me? You know, surely the artist who created that artwork should receive some financial compensation. Otherwise, go and find a royalty-free artwork online, because I'm sure there's something out there. Or, you know, generate an image via an AI, or use, you know, a Picasso or something, where the person's long dead and they're not going to come and sue you. But to expect an artist to give away an image that they've slaved over for 40 hours to you for free, for you to then profit on your business, is a bit of a strange request, you know. It wouldn't sit right with me to ask for that and not expect to compensate the artist.
And sometimes you don't know where you stand on these things until you get asked the question. Because I think I would be okay if it was students from a school who were learning.
Oh, yeah.
No, if the teacher wanted to use my image.
100%.
But I think it's different if it's someone... I don't know. Yeah, it's funny. I'm trying to think of how I would react to that.
I mean, I think if...
Different, I think, if they were saying, we're using some inspiration images and we put your name, we just wanted to let you know. But if they were saying, we're going to teach people to paint this image of yours... I think I would feel a bit funny about that too. Yeah.
Well, it's just like, if I say yes, then they have that image that they're going to then use for life, you know,
run you a whole business.
And it's going, they're going around, you know, imagine it gets massive and they're doing a class every week and every person there is paying $250 to sit and paint my painting, and that person running the class just walks about going, oh, good, add a bit more yellow there. It's like, why wouldn't you use your painting? I mean, if I was doing a paint and sip, it would be my painting that I'd be teaching
the
students, not someone's I'd found online and didn't pay for.
Yeah.
It felt a bit weird and a bit... And I just think maybe they hadn't thought it through, you know? I don't think they were being kind of malicious about it and trying to swindle me or, you know, they just probably hadn't really thought through that that painting took me hours and hours and hours of my time. And, you know, 100% it's my idea, my skill that's created that. And I'm sorry, but no, I don't really want someone else to profit from that if I don't get any cut. It's just
exactly.
It doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to mention a couple of books just on this idea of kind of creative property and creative ideas. I've read a book by Elizabeth Gilbert called Big Magic, and I'm at the moment listening on Audible to a book by Rick Rubin called The Creative Act, A Way of Being. Both really, really interesting books, and I'll put them in the show notes. I'm not that far into the Rick Rubin book yet, but both Rick Rubin and Elizabeth Gilbert talk about this idea of creativity and ideas being almost like separate entities in their own right, and that people are kind of conduits, if you like, to those creative ideas. It's a little bit woo-woo, but I quite like it. And they both talk quite similarly, actually, about in parts of their book about this idea where an idea, a creative idea, will kind of exist in the ether, if you like, and it waits for a person sort of to receive this idea. And that there's sort of studies done where, you know, more than one place in the world have had these ideas kind of happen at the same time. And it can be from, like, I think in Elizabeth Gilbert's book, she talked about sort of scientific breakthroughs, you know, things being discovered scientifically by different people, and, you know, other things such as creative art, you know, creative things being invented and things like that. Whilst it is a bit woo-woo, and I get that, some people, I mean Julie, will just roll their eyes and think it's absolutely God's work.
See my face going, yeah. You gotta be kidding me.
I kind of do like the idea of how, you know, creativity is a kind of like, it's a kind of, I don't know, it's in us all, and we all can just tap into our own creativity. And there are people out there, I haven't got a creative bone in my body, and that's just rubbish. Like, I actually think we all have a creative part of us, and whether that comes out in creating painting art, or whether that comes out in, you know, gardening, or whether that comes out in whatever it is, where you talk or something, there's something in everybody that has creative spirit, if you like. And I kind of like the way they talked about how, you know, there is no kind of original idea. There's just lots of ideas floating around, and we, I guess, whether we're seeing stuff online or in the world or in a book or hearing on the news or talking to people, like, we're all going to be influenced. And sometimes people are all influenced at the same time. And sometimes there's sort of trends that are happening in the world that we subconsciously are absorbing, and without even realizing it, we're going to start creating art or something in a certain way. And of course it makes sense that someone else somewhere else will also create something similar in that way, because it just happens to be, you know, in magazines or in music or in anything, there's like movements, there's trends, they happen.
You don't know you're caught up in that movement.
Exactly. You might not know right at the time. You know, the Renaissance people might not have realized that they were in the Renaissance era, the people doing Cubism. Yeah. You know, it might not have been a conscious thing that they all sat down together and went, right, let's do this art in this style now. This is what we're going to do. It's a movement. You know, it just sort of happened that it was fashionable and it was a thing that people started to do. And it kind of then built and built and built. And you can't pinpoint who had the idea first necessarily.
It's funny because that does, I mean, initially your description of creativity existing in the ether, like, obviously that prickles with me and I think that's not for me. And I think I don't like the sense of feeling like my creativity, I haven't got agency over that.
No, I get that.
But I think, I mean, sometimes I think when I come across these things that I react against so strongly, it's often sometimes when I need to think, oh, maybe that is a book that I should read because it's outside of what I would normally, and it does...
I think you'll enjoy it.
That's my on things that make me feel uncomfortable anyway.
I think the Elizabeth Gilbert book is probably a little bit more woo-woo. The Rick Rubin book isn't so much. Just that idea, he sort of talks about kind of only in that one point about sort of ideas being there for everybody and they're waiting to settle on someone. And like you say, yes, I want to have agency over my own ideas, but I think it would be ignorant to insist that we are not influenced by outside sources, whether that you know, just the fashion in the shops, the music that's in on the radio, the, you know, like everything out there is getting absorbed into us, whether we like it or not, and that is going to influence at some stage how we do things and colours that we use, perhaps, or, you know, like it's nothing exists in a vacuum. We are always going to be influenced.
I don't think that's why I prickle against that statement. And I can be a bit black and white about things. And that's often why I like people that are a bit more grayscale, because I think it does, you know, I think it can be really narrowing and actually detrimental to look at life that way. But I think sometimes it's that same sentiment of people thinking that if they're not creative, then they're never going to be creative. I think it's one of those things that you can, if you put enough hours into it and you try to learn the skill, you can, anyone could learn and do. Yeah. It doesn't need to be some, like my art when I was 7 was not great. Like my art when I was in high school at the beginning was not great. It's one of those processes where you learn and grow, and I didn't just get struck by the creativity gods.
No.
I think it's like it than someone else.
It's like it's a muscle. It's a muscle that needs to be exercised.
That's an analogy I can get behind.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I just think, you know, you're not necessarily good at anything. You know, you weren't good at walking when you were born, or talking.
Mm.
You weren't, you know, and anyone, even if you've got a musical inclination, very few, apart from savants or whatever, can just sit down at piano and suddenly bust out kind of, you know, a melody that makes sense. But with practice, all things can be improved. And yes, I think we all have the capacity to become more and more creative the more we practice that act.
The other book that might be worth mentioning in this same portion of the podcast would be that Steal Like an Artist book. I haven't actually read it, but I've heard a lot of people say that it can, if you're struggling in this area, it's one of those ones that has a few wider concepts where you can sort of go, okay, this is normal, this is how lots of people have evolved, this is how you can do it properly. I think that could be another one worth looking into.
I've only heard a podcast with him talking about it. I've not actually read the book. It's on my to-do list of reading, and it was actually that book, Steal Like an Artist, that, you know, doesn't take too much of a leap to realize that the podcast name Fail Like an Artist kind of was inspired by that, because I kind of thought, well, yeah, you know, like I like how he's used that Steal Like an Artist analogy, and, you know, all artists,
I think that might be taken off something else as well,
and all artists kind of steal.
That's a
and
spin
I was
on
like
something
well I'm gonna
else.
I'm gonna spin on that and think we will fail too, so I'm going to call our podcast Fail Like an Artist. And I put that to you, Julie. It's one of the many other names that it just sort of, it felt like it summed up what we wanted to talk about most accurately. So yeah, in a kind of funny twist of irony, we've kind of stolen the title off of a book about stealing ideas. And he talks about it in a very, I think, frank and open way. So I think if you are worried about stealing, you know, feeling like you're stealing ideas, that would be a really good place to start, and read to see what his take on it. And I think he interviews lots of other people in the book and talks to other artists to get a really rounded view about this idea of copying. So yeah, we should definitely sort of link that one in there.
Cool.
I did also want to kind of touch on, but I think this is actually a whole nother podcast, but I think we will definitely need to do a podcast about sort of AI and how that...
Yeah, I think that's way too big.
It is too big, but there is obviously this huge thing at the moment with AI artwork and the...
Oh, yeah.
...copyright and sort of intellectual kind of property idea around how AI are sourcing from, you know, millions of artists' online artwork, pooling that together and kind of then creating their own new artworks. So I don't know enough about the topic, really, but that is something that is worth sort of investigating if you're interested in... I'd be interested if anybody has any ideas or thoughts around that to reach out to us.
I actually... and I might put this in there if we do want to get started. If anyone wants to sort of... If anyone wants to have some initial reading, there was a really interesting newsletter set out by a Australian publication called Galar. And in their newsletter this week, it was all about how the editor was feeling a bit worried about what AI was going to mean for magazines. And I found her thoughts on that really, they resonated with me. And I thought she wrote about them really beautifully and just the humanity aspect and clinging onto that. So I might try and include that because it might be worth initial first take. But yes, I think we should do that as a separate podcast because we're almost 2 hours into this one and I start panicking. So we've got a couple of quotes that we thought we'd just throw out there for the end. So mine is from Chuck Close and his quote was, "Inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work," which I've always really loved.
Yeah, I love Chuck Close's work.
Me too. I have since really I was in school. Yeah.
When I was teaching, I did a whole module on portraits and used his as reference, and the kids loved it, and the work was just so cool. And I remember being like, "Oh, I want to do portraits," but I never have. Might be next when I get bored of still life. Okay, yeah, my quote is from Austin Kleon who we've just talked about, and his is, "The only way to find your voice is to use it. It's hardwired, built into you. Talk about the things you love. Your voice will follow." And I think
I love that.
When you're talking about voice, I think he's meaning artistic voice or, you know, style or whatever. So I think that you've just got to remember that, like, your voice, your style, it's like your handwriting, and you know, you just need to use it. You just need to paint. You just need to create. And the more you do, the more you will see that coming through, and it will always be unique to you.
I feel like that's such a great way of summing it up. That really, I like that.
Cool.
Well done.
So we are hoping to do this is sort of ties in with this copying thing. So we're hoping to do a 30-day sort of, I don't want to call it a challenge because that feels, I hate the word challenge, but it's going to be a 30-day prompt inspiration for sort of posts on Instagram. So in April, this is kind of taken from an idea that I started, I think, back in 2019, where I did a challenge called April for Artists. So we're probably going to use that same hashtag with just 2023 added on the end. But yeah, it was a bit of a stingy point for me because that ended up being kind of copied by a few people and they didn't necessarily credit me when they also ran a challenge similar to it. I've moved on from that and let it go, but I do remember at the time I'd done that challenge sort of 3 years I think in a row, and then I didn't do it, and then somebody did it and kind of made out like it was their idea. And then somebody else did it and changed it to August instead of April. And, you know, it's hard because it's like one of those grey areas where you're like, well, anyone can come up with a challenge and anyone can come up with 30 prompts for people to use for social media. But when I looked at some of them and they were very, very similar, it I felt just a bit uncomfortable that I hadn't been acknowledged. That was the hard part for me.
Yeah, We might try and come up with some of these prompts together. And I think one of the interesting things, hopefully that will come out of it, was that if there are a bunch of us, even if there's 10 of us doing our new April for Artists, we will all have a different take on the same prompt. And I think if there's anything that you can get out of that, it's that. Like, so the way that Phoebe will photograph her painting, her work, and the way that I do it and the way that someone else does it is all so different. And that's, I mean, I find that's always the interesting thing about prompts. I love seeing what other people, how they interpret it.
And really the idea behind this was just to give people a kind of framework that they can then use later on if they're stuck for ideas on what to talk about or what to share on social media. They can look back at this list and go, oh, well, I really enjoyed that day, or I didn't do this day, or, you know, because 30 days of consecutive posting is really, really hard. And I don't think, we're not saying like if you do this challenge, you have to do every single day or you failed. Like, expect to fail. In fact, we encourage you to not do every single day, like just do what feels right for you and what would, you know, work for you. So we're going to have a brainstorm, think of some prompts, but we'll put a box in our stories too, so if you've got any ideas of things you think would be fun to share, so that, you know, a bit like the March Meet the Maker that was happening or that is happening right now, those prompts to me seem a little bit more aimed at creators, so more things like small businesses or perhaps illustrators, or not illustrators, what's the word, like makers, I think, well, because it's called March Meet the Maker, so that makes sense, but people that make things rather than necessarily artists. So some of those prompts wouldn't really sort of be applicable to artists, which is why I came up with the April for Artists, because I wanted to make every single one specific to people that either, you know, paint or draw or use photography or ceramics or something that's more, I suppose, art rather than a kind of product. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
we'll try and put them in next week's newsletter. And then we'll obviously pop it up on Instagram before it goes out. So
Be great for people to join in. Yeah. And yeah, just be lovely to a lovely way of connecting with people, because what's nice about that is that you can follow that hashtag when we've created it, and obviously we'll put it in a post like Julie said. And if you follow that hashtag, those images will pop up in your feed and you'll be able to find other artists that way that are doing the challenge. And that's a really nice way to kind of network and build a community and help each other by liking each other's posts and commenting on each other's posts and, you know, lifting each other up and supporting each other. So that's sort of another reason why I like doing those challenges. Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. We had a lot of things to talk about, but I think we have to wrap it up here, don't we, Julie? Otherwise we'll be here all day, so we'll probably come back to this. No, that's fine, don't be sorry. I think we'll have to come back to this topic because it's such a big one, but
I think it will keep popping up. It'll get peppered through a lot of our other conversations, I think, like a lot of things. There's just some ongoing conversations that, and I think, do you know, it maybe our none of our, certainly for me, none of my ideas are set in stone. How I think today, that may change. And I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind. It's a bit of a growth mindset. And you might be coming at it right now feeling like you only think of art in this way. It has to be original if it includes this. And that may change over time. And that's great, I think. So expect our opinions to grow and change and evolve over time too.
Definitely. And I think there's a whole other podcast that you could go into about sort of coming up with finding a kind of theme or topic or point of interest to delve into that's unique to you. Like, it's a big one for
finding your emerging voice.
We've talked about finding your style, but narrowing that down even more to sort of find the niche of thing that you're interested in is quite hard for an emerging artist. And it took me a few years to feel like I've got to a place where I'm confident and comfortable with what I'm exploring as a creative idea. And I think people think that that should be a spontaneous thing, that you, the moment you decide you want to pursue art, should just appear in front of you, and actually it takes years of practice and thinking and kind of discernment to get there. So don't panic if you feel like you haven't got there yet.
Yeah, I think the other thing that in the future would be good to delve into a bit more is how to overcome the comparison trap, because I know that's one big thing that often comes out of the whole copying originality debate, especially with regards to social media. So, you know, we'll hopefully get into that. Because I think that's a huge chapter.
That's another podcast too. Well, it's anyway, just lots of...
We'll be around for a bit.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. If you want to see my epic fail cake, then make sure you subscribe to the newsletter. You can also find out lots of other stuff about the podcast on that. sorry, I was just being silly then. Please do. Julie does a fantastic job with our newsletter, and there's lots of goodness in there. So there will be a link in the show notes.
I feel like there's going to be a Phoebe recipe section. This will be the second week in a row. We've got...
this isn't a food podcast. Didn't you know? yes, thank you as well. If you do want to support the podcast on Ko-Fi, whatever it's called, there's a link in the show notes for that too. You can find us over on @faillikeanartist. Do email in your fails to faillikeanartist@gmail.com or send us a DM. And Julie?
You can find me over @JulieBattisti or @juliebattisti.com. And where can they find you?
You can find me at phoebeganza.com or on Instagram @phoebegansaart. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks for joining in.
We'll speak to you next time. Until then.
Chat soon.
Keep on failing. Keep on failing. Bye-bye. You can find me on...
Phoebe Gander.
Oh, it's just like some weird noise.
I thought you'd just forgotten who you were.
Sound like an elephant. Oh, God, no. Sorry. I heard this like weird trumpeting noise outside. And I'm like... Oh no, there's an elephant loose in the garden. Julie's got wasps on her elephant. Oh, sorry.
You looked really confused. I was like, God, she's totally forgotten who she is.
Like this. I'm like, what is that? I have no idea what it is.
None of your kids are learning the recorder, are they?
If there's an elephant, no, my kids are all at school. If there's an elephant in my garden, I'll take a photo. Put that in the show notes too.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.